The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
I'm Lydia L. Corey, and tonight I'm really, really pleased to be joined by Jodie Moore, who's an associate solicitor at Raiden Solicitors here in St. Albans. Jodie, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lydia. I'm excited to be here.
And we're really looking forward to talking to you tonight. We're going to talk about surrogacy, which I have to, in all honesty, say I didn't think was an area of law, never mind an area of family law. So I'm really fascinated. I've got loads of questions lined up for you. But before we start, can you tell our listeners about your role at Raiden Solicitors?
Yeah, so as you say, I'm an associate solicitor at the team at Raiden's. We're a specialist family firm, so I help clients generally on the breakdown of their relationships to deal with financial claims that they might have against each other and also issues pertaining to children. But I have a particular interest in surrogacy work as well.
Great. So we're going to talk to you about surrogacy in general, and I think it's a fascinating topic to speak about. I certainly have a lot to learn. What exactly, you know, in terms of the legal framework, what does surrogacy mean?
So surrogacy is essentially where a woman carries a baby and gives birth to the baby for either another couple or another individual. There are two sort of types of surrogacy. First of all, you have what's called gestational surrogacy, and that is essentially where the surrogate acts as a host. So they have no genetic link to the child, grow the baby, and that's the surrogate's role. Or alternatively, traditional surrogacy, and this is where not only does the surrogate carry the child for the intended parents, but she is also providing the egg. So there is a genetic link in those circumstances.
Oh, okay, yeah. Big difference between the two, and I'm sure the implications legally are greater as a result of that.
Actually, they're not. They're not at all. It's exactly the same premise. I mean, I guess you sort of have traditional surrogacy, and it's called traditional surrogacy because it's something that we could do prior to IVF being, you know, and scientific developments enabling us to do something else. But no, that, you know, in terms of the way the law deals with them, they're you know, exactly the same in terms
That's
of the process.
Really interesting. And how common is it in the UK? I have to say, I don't think I know anybody who has been a surrogate or had a child through surrogacy.
Yeah, so it's very hard to know how many children are born through surrogacy every year, as there are no absolute statistics available on the number of surrogate cases that we have. The data that we do have, however, relates to the court applications that people make to obtain what we call a parental order. And that is essentially an order that provides intended parents with, you know, the legal rights and status of parenthood for their children. From the data that we do have, we're talking, you know, really quite small figures generally across the UK. But in 2008, there were just 67 parental orders made across the whole of the UK. By 2022, that's grown to 449. So we're still talking about really small numbers, but you can see that there's a massive increase just in that period of time, and I suspect probably they will continue to increase as people look at, you know, different routes into parenthood.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, surprisingly small numbers still, actually. I don't know why I thought it would be bigger. So what is the process that needs to happen with surrogacy, and where does the law come into play with it?
Yeah, so we have a legal framework that surrounds surrogacy here in the UK. It's actually quite old, though. It dates back to the 1980s when sort of IVF first came on the scene. And as a result of that, I would say, unfortunately, the law surrounding surrogacy is more about tolerating rather than encouraging it. And this is because, you know, back in the 1980s, realistically, that, you know, there was a different public attitude towards surrogacy. There wasn't the same acceptance of it as being, you know, an acceptable form of family formation. And also we had less tolerance of the diverse range of families that family forms that we do have today as well. So what the current law does is it permits surrogacy in only certain circumstances and puts conditions upon people's ability to sort of enter into surrogacy arrangements. For example, the law as it currently stands prohibits commercial surrogacy. So we have what we call altruistic surrogacy here, which means it can't be done for a profit. And there are prohibitions on your ability to, you know, if you're an intended parent, you want to find a surrogate, you're not allowed to advertise for that. And if you're somebody that wants to act as a surrogate, you're not allowed to advertise the fact that you're, you know, willing to act as a surrogate. There are also restrictions on people's ability to sort of broker arrangements unless with a very specific conditions are met on a non-profit basis. So ultimately, you know, if you're somebody that's looking at starting a surrogacy journey, looking at finding a surrogate in the UK, the options that you have available to you are either to sort of, you know, do something informally. You've got personal connections, somebody that's willing to give that gift to you through social media, or to utilise the service of a small number of surrogacy agencies which operate in the UK to help match parents and surrogates and to help them through that journey. The sort of third alternative is to go abroad and have an international surrogacy and take advantage of perhaps the more developed and streamlined legal process of other countries. So, for example, you know, some states in the US, in particular, somewhere like California, have a, you know, much more streamlined process than we do over here.
And could we say that the law is maybe a little bit outdated?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a very fair comment. There has been a recent report, actually, that's been prepared suggesting recommendations as to how the law can be updated.
So it's so interesting what you said about the framing of how surrogacy is possible. It's very restricted and surprising, actually, that even that small number does happen. It seems like a lot of pieces of the puzzle have to be in place for it to actually happen.
Yeah, and there's other sort of nuances to it as well. In, you know, crucially in the UK at the moment, if you're an intended parent and you go through a surrogacy journey, you're not actually recognised as the legal parent of your child at birth. There is a sort of post-birth process that has to happen. And actually at the point of birth, even, you know, if you're a surrogate and you say, here's your child, congratulations, you and your spouse, if you have a spouse, will actually be considered the legal parents of that child until that legal process has taken place to enable the transfer of parentage to take place through this sort of parental order system. And the purpose of that order is effectively to extinguish the rights of the surrogate and her spouse, if she has one, and transfer it over to the intended parent. So, you know, there is this odd position where
a little bit of no man's land,
yeah,
if you like,
exactly,
between the two. That's really interesting. And of course, I'm, you know, I have to ask you the question. I guess sometimes things can get tricky. There are probably flashpoints where communications break down. Where are the complications in that process, and you know, how can it go wrong?
I think one of the key flashpoints really is that surrogacy arrangements in the UK are not legally binding, which means that in any arrangement, there is always a potential risk that the relationship between the surrogate and the intended parents will break down. And for whatever reason, the parties want to renege on the arrangement they've reached, you know, whether it's as extreme as the surrogate saying, I don't want to transfer, you know, parental rights over to you and transfer that parentage, or whether it's the intended parents, you know, for whatever reason, at the hospital door saying, oh, well, actually, I don't want this child anymore. The surrogate is the parent. So, you know, whilst in reality circumstances like that are very rare, there is this fundamental underlying risk that something like that might happen. Mitigating against things like that is really sort of making sure that you've got an open dialogue from the beginning and you really know exactly what it is that you both want to achieve and get out of it, even from, you know, the most mundane things such as if you've got a concern about them eating a particular food or, you know, bits and pieces like that, just to make sure, or, you know, do you want to speak to them a lot during the pregnancy and find out how it's going? Do you want to be left alone? And making sure that everybody is aligned on their wishes to try and ensure that relationship, you know, remains good throughout.
Of course, I hadn't even thought of elements like that, like the involvement during the pregnancy, because diet is a massive issue. I mean, really affects immunizations are an issue, or even decisions to drink caffeine or alcohol. And so I guess they can all be flashpoints.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's not something that you've discussed and actually, you know, you think everything is plain sailing and that you're completely aligned in terms of what you're trying to achieve, and then it turns out that you've got very different views on, you know, I'm actually pregnant at the moment and there's so many things that you're not supposed to eat, but, you know, it's a risk factor. So it's, are you happy with them taking that risk or not taking that risk? And, you know, you're handing control over to them, really. So making sure that that's been discussed beforehand.
And I guess the crucial point is actually the days and weeks after the baby is born. That, I suppose that's when, I mean, feelings change. And I suppose that must be a complicated area too.
Yeah, I mean, actually, so when the baby is born, as I mentioned earlier, the intended parents aren't automatically the parents at that point. There's a process that needs to happen. And the process of getting a parental order, ordinarily, it takes about sort of 6 to 12 months to get that to go through fully. And a surrogate mother is not able to consent to the transfer of parentage until a period of at least 6 weeks after birth. So in reality, you know, what happens in most circumstances is a surrogate gives birth, intended parents take the child home with them, but then you have this sort of disconnect between what the law recognises as being the child's parents and who is practically doing things on the ground. And that can, you know, have really serious implications in some circumstances. For example, if the baby needs medical treatment, technically speaking, the person that is able to consent to that medical treatment is not, you know, the parents that are looking after the child on a day-to-day basis. It's the surrogate who is unlikely to want to make those decisions. And it puts everyone in a tricky position, particularly as well, you know, you get people that go internationally for surrogacies because of, you know, the benefits of the framework, etc. But irrespective of whether you have a domestic or an international surrogacy, when you come home, you are still not recognised as the parent until that process of getting the parental order is takes place. So you could have a circumstance in which you've entered into a surrogacy agreement abroad on the condition that there is no ongoing ties between you and the surrogate and they're not going to be involved. And you come home and, you know, your child needs an immunisation and technically you're not the one that's supposed to be consenting to that, or, you know, anything, you know, more extreme than that in a hospital situation.
And of course, the law in the UK applies and supersedes the law where you had, for example, the surrogacy arrangement, wherever that is. So when you're back in the UK, it's UK law. So you have to wait until that process has gone
through. Yeah, in order to be recognised legally as a parent in the UK, you would need to make sure that you go through this process when you get back. So you might have a birth certificate issued, depending on the country that you go to, that says you are the legal parents, parent one, parent two. But notwithstanding that, you still have to come back and go through this process over here to ensure that it's recognised here as well.
Wow, fascinating. Really, really interesting and complicated. It is quite,
yeah,
quite tricky.
Yeah, really, really complicated. And things that you wouldn't... I think the difficulty is because of the way that we are with the law and, you know, how things have moved on since the 1980s, we're essentially in a position where it doesn't reflect what you might think going into these sort of arrangements would be common sense and practical, you know, considerations are just currently missing.
So if you were to give advice to parents who are considering surrogacy, what would you say to them if they're considering surrogacy?
Yeah, so I think the earlier that intended parents obtain legal advice, the better, so that, you know, that they are informed from the outset. And certainly our role as solicitors is sort of largely limited to the post-birth getting the parental order sorted, but much earlier than that, understanding what it is that you're going to be required to do and getting all of that done before you're, you know, up all hours of the night looking after a child and before these sort of flashpoints arise means that you'll be really knowledgeable and, you know what you're going into. Certainly if you're considering an international surrogacy, you'll need to consider not only getting advice from a surrogacy law specialist, but also an immigration specialist to make sure that, you know, you can return home with your baby and that doesn't become an issue of itself. And I'm sure that there is nobody that enters into a surrogacy arrangement without giving it a considerable amount of thought, probably at the end of a very, you know, tumultuous long journey of, you know, trying to become a parent. But really do your research and make sure you know what your options are so that you're going into it with open eyes.
Really, really helpful advice there, Jodie. That really brilliant. And thank you so much for helping our listeners navigate that, because it's tricky. It's not a simple process for sure. Mainly, I would say, because of the emotions as well that are potentially involved in it. And that's something the law can't cater for, I guess.
Absolutely.
So, Jodie, just before we let you go, I'd love to ask, you know, it mean about the process. Like when you think about a woman carrying a child for somebody else so that they can have a family when they probably haven't been able to have a family, it's such an altruistic, kind and generous process. And I wonder from your side, is that part of the reason why you focused on surrogacy and what kind of a legal process it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think as family lawyers, we generally are involved in helping people with issues pertaining to the breakdown of their relationships, the breakdown of their marriage, you know, issues relating to children. So actually to be able to have an area of practice in family law, which is very much focused on family formation rather than breakdown, is, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to be a part of that.
Brilliant. Jodie, thanks so much for honestly opening my eyes to the process of surrogacy and thanks for joining us on the Parents Show.
Thank you very much for having me, Lydia.